This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 734 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Palestine. Early Thursday morning, as news of a possible end to the slaughter began to circulate, journalist Salah al-Jafarawi and his colleagues, along with recording their own updates, informed people by walking in the streets and shouting that there was an end to the war and a hopeful truce. Reporter Anas Ayad captured this clip. Just a few hours ago, Salah al-Jafarawi filmed celebrations in the streets. Members of Gaza's heroic civil defense, he says, share in the joy of the news of a ceasefire. Here is that clip.
لحظات لحظات انتظرنا سنوات لنعيشها انتظرنا سنتين عشان نعيش هذه اللحظات سجدات الشكر في مفترقات مدينة غزة هذه اللحظات اللي انتظرناها سنتين من العذابات المستمرة اليوم بنعيشها هان في شمال قطاع غزة الحمد لله رب العالمين الحمد لله ربنا أكرمنا وشوفنا هذه المشاهد الحمد لله
أرواحنا من أجل الله
أرواحنا من أجل الله
Palestinians on the ground in Gaza City say that since the ceasefire talks in Egypt began earlier this week, Israel only continued to escalate its attacks. The Gaza government media office stated on Wednesday that in the 4 days since the announcement of a potential truce, Israel carried out 271 separate attacks, killing approximately 126 people, 80 of whom were killed in Gaza City. Our longtime contributor Mohammed Assad uploaded images after the Israeli army destroyed his home earlier this week on October 7th in Gaza City, forcing his family to seek shelter once again. His home was damaged in previous attacks, and his family worked to clean it up and repair it. But this week it was completely razed to the ground. Quote, our dreams turned into a mirage, he said. Earlier in the week, the media office released updated statistics on the 2 years of genocide, including figures on the destruction of homes, livelihood, health, and infrastructure across Gaza. Among the data set was an estimate that Israel has dropped more than 200,000 tons of explosives on Gaza since October 2023. More than 835 mosques were completely destroyed, the media office added, and at least 180 others were damaged, while 3 churches were damaged in bombings. More than half of all Gaza's 60 cemeteries have been targeted as well, 14 of which have been completely destroyed and 18 partially destroyed. The media office estimates that nearly 80,000 Palestinians have been killed or are still missing since the beginning of the genocide, 67,000 of whom were brought to hospitals and recorded as killed by the health ministry. Nearly 10,000 are missing and still buried under the rubble, and approximately 20,000 children have been killed. Among the dead are 1,015 infants under a year old. 460 Palestinians have died from starvation, and nearly 170,000 have been injured, including 19,000 who will need long-term rehabilitation. 4,800 people have had their limbs amputated, nearly a fifth of them children. Israeli armored vehicles packed with explosives have continued to destroy buildings and entire city blocks around Gaza City, particularly in the Sabra neighborhood. Al Jazeera's Hani Mahmoud reported on Wednesday that, quote, Israeli forces are scaling up attacks aimed at the systematic destruction of the city's remaining infrastructure, flattening what is left of residential buildings, public facilities, and entire neighborhoods. The army is reportedly using remote-controlled explosive robots alongside air attacks and heavy artillery to demolish densely built areas, Mahmoud added. Fighter jets have targeted wide boulevards and high-rise blocks in the city center, leaving large sections of Gaza City reduced to rubble. Despite talk of a potential agreement, many in Gaza believe the Israeli military is rushing to complete the destruction before any truce takes effect. On the ground, people describe what feels like the final stage of destruction, an effort to render Gaza uninhabitable by erasing all means of life, he said. On October 3rd, reporter Hamza Kareka spoke to a grandmother who survived an Israeli attack on tent shelters at the Gaza port. Sitting on the floor next to a metal bed with no mattress where two small children lay unconscious, she asks, quote, "What did children do to deserve this? Three children and their mother, who is my daughter, and my sister, over 15 people were killed in this strike. What did they do?" She says that they were displaced from Jabalia in northern Gaza, and the Israeli army targeted their tent. Palestinian civil defense workers in Gaza say that the situation in the north of Gaza is apocalyptic, especially following last week's closure by Israel of the main north-south road in and out of Gaza City and the rest of the northern governorates. Civil defense ambulance services worker Mohamed Tamous was filmed by journalist Mohamed Abu Luay on October 5th. Tamous says that massacres, bombings, and detonations are happening around the clock with no let-up. Quote, "Entire landmarks and blocks have been erased and have fallen on top of residents' heads. Entire families are erased from the civil registry. In northern Gaza, life has become almost non-existent. There is no electricity, water, food, or drink, or anything suitable for life. The situation here is very difficult, very catastrophic," he said. On October 7th, marking 2 years of Israel's genocide in Gaza, Palestinian civil defense spokesperson Mahmoud Bassal described what 24 months of relentless assault has taken from Palestinians, with the whole world watching. He said that along with the enormous death toll, 2,700 families have been completely erased from the registry, and 6,000 people are now the sole survivors of their entire families. More than 90% of all homes in Gaza, Bassal says, have been destroyed in Israel's 2-year assault. More than 80% of Gaza itself is under the control of the Israeli occupation. He says, quote, 2 years of war, and we still say to the whole world, we continue to repeat to the world that we are a people who deserve to live, and that our people deserve to live like any other people in the world, and that they have the right to be safe and at peace without any war or murder. Also on Tuesday, Al Jazeera's Hind Khoudari reported that a Palestinian child was shot in the head in eastern Gaza, and 6 Palestinians were killed in separate attacks in the southern city of Khan Yunis. She said, quote, "This shows that despite everything going on in the negotiations over the U.S. proposed ceasefire deal, Palestinians are still being killed throughout the Gaza Strip. The Israeli military's explosive robots continue destroying residential neighborhoods where Palestinians know that even if this war is brought to an end, they won't find anything to go back to." Maha Husseini, a journalist, human rights worker, and researcher in Gaza with the Euromed Human Rights Monitor, recorded this video for the United Nations Human Rights Council meeting earlier this week.
"Mr. President, I speak to you from my last refuge after I was forcibly expelled from my home in Gaza City under relentless Israeli bombardment. Though I don't know if by the time you hear these words, I will still be alive or buried under a rubble. Gaza is under unprecedented Israeli attacks, and I have been forcibly displaced with my colleagues at Euromed Human Rights Monitor several times now. I meant to present this statement as a human rights defender, to document and to advocate. But today I can no longer count the Israeli crimes I witnessed because they surround me in every breath and every hour. It's a shame that I had to tear up my business card at some point during this genocide to avoid being killed or detained by the Israeli military. We demand, not plead, we demand immediate protection for those documenting genocide in Gaza. We demand unhindered access for international investigators, and we demand that the perpetrators are brought to justice. Every silence from you, representatives of states and civil society, at this council is another strike of the hammer driving the coffin of the international law."
Maha Husseini of Euromed Human Rights Monitor. The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza reported on Tuesday that Israel's destruction of the health system over the last 2 years is complete and deliberate. Quote, over the course of 730 days, the health sector has been subjected to devastating and lethal attacks that have ravaged the very fabric of its services and infrastructure, the health ministry stated. The ministry added, quote, these crimes have earned the description health genocide due to the catastrophic indicators that have ravaged the health and humanitarian landscape in the Gaza Strip. Observers and decision makers in international health and humanitarian institutions are concerned about the success of emergency responses that maintain a minimum level of service. Hospitals have been transformed into concrete structures as a result of direct and indirect military strikes, completely emptied of the components of diagnostic and therapeutic care. More than 1,700 medical personnel have been killed, and 362 are still detained in Israeli torture camps, where they are being deprived of basic human rights. 25 hospitals out of 38 are completely out of service, leaving only 13 still partially operating under difficult conditions. Israel has also destroyed 103 primary healthcare facilities. 55% of all medicines are currently out of stock. Two-thirds of all medical supplies are out of stock, and nearly 70% of laboratory supplies are out of stock, the ministry adds. James Elder, the spokesperson for the UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, reported from Gaza on the prevention by the Israeli army of newborn incubators earlier this week, deliberately denying the most fragile babies basic machinery to keep them alive.
All missions in Gaza are life-saving, and maybe this one particularly so, heading north right now into Gaza City to a hospital under evacuation order to get incubators out and to other hospitals where they are so desperately in need. Incubators, oxygen, ventilators. Here we go again, fifth time seeking approval to save children's lives. Fifth time.
That was from UNICEF. Last week, we reported on the Global Samud Flotilla, the 44 boats with nearly 500 humanitarian aid activists that attempted to break Israel's siege on Gaza. All of the boats were eventually hijacked and seized by Israeli forces, but the last boat, the Marinette, evaded Israeli capture until Friday, October 3rd. Right before it was hijacked, a Marinette passenger delivered this final message to Palestinians in Gaza.
From the sea to Gaza, we will not forget you. We will not let you to be forgotten. This is the voice of humanity. No one can stop the voice of humanity. Free, free Palestine.
After seizing all of the boats and unlawfully towing them out of international waters into the Ashdod port, Israeli forces detained all of the activists in Ashdod before transferring them to the notorious Ketziot prison in the Nakab Desert. In Ashdod, Israel's extremist National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir taunted and screamed at the flotilla activists, calling them terrorists. After her release, a Turkish activist described the abusive treatment that they experienced at the hands of Israeli guards. She says, quote, "We protested Ben-Gvir very well. I said, 'Shut your big mouth, you genocidal filth.'" She goes on to describe the harsh conditions inside the prison and says that there was writing on the wall in dried blood, words written by Palestinian women who had been imprisoned there before. The detained activists were told to drink water from the toilets. 22-year-old Swedish activist Greta Thunberg, who was a participant on the flotilla, was singled out for abuse, according to eyewitnesses. She was physically assaulted, and Israeli soldiers attached an Israeli flag to her back and tied her hands. Italian journalist Lorenzo Agostino described her treatment.
Greta Thunberg, a brave woman who is only 22 years old, she was humiliated and wrapped in an Israeli flag and exhibited like a trophy. I had the feeling of being in a really barbaric place, and I really hope that this barbarism might be over soon. First, we were kidnapped in international waters. Then they took us to land, and once on land, they behaved like a terrorist group. People were kicked. We were left without fresh water for over 2 days. Overall, they took every opportunity to humiliate any of us. We were treated like terrorists because we thought we were terrorists. So I was unlucky enough to get out just while Ben-Gvir was coming. And so the police used very, very tight handcuffs on us that stopped our circulation. They blindfolded us and they put us in a van with barely any clothes and with very, very low temperature. So higher conditioning that was like freezing. And they kept her there for probably 3 hours.
After she was released, Greta Thunberg said this at a press conference.
No, wait, no, not heroes. No, no, we are doing the bare minimum. What we are doing is not in any way. No one has to come to the rescue of Palestinian people.
Shifa Abdi, a Finnish Somali activist, told reporters after she was released from Israeli detention that the most shocking thing about the prison wasn't the abuse they faced, but the place itself. She says, quote, "When we arrived at the prison, there was a picture on the wall showing the destruction of Gaza, all the houses in ruins, and Palestinians in Gaza trying to find their families or their belongings. And on that picture, it says in Arabic, Gaza al-Jadida, or New Gaza. They are proud of it. What they have done to Gaza is a source of pride for them. Beneath it was a large dried blood stain. We had to anxiously think about what had been done to the Palestinians here. Every cell was filled with the names of Palestinian men. We found a piece of cloth we tried to clean with because no one cleaned anything there. And on it, there was an embroidered name, Abu Allah. That's how we found out the names of the Palestinian prisoners. Every night I was anxiously thinking, where had these men been taken? What had been done to them? Where is Abu Allah? I'm in Helsinki now, but where is Abu Allah? Allah's father, where is he? What have they done to him?" Activist Shifa Abdi speaking in Helsinki earlier this week. Another flotilla of three boats named after the Gaza sunbirds, Alaa al-Najjar and Anas al-Sharif, set off towards Gaza from southern Europe as the global Samud flotilla was being hijacked last week. All three boats were intercepted and hijacked by Israeli forces early in the morning on October 8th. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight Underdog Palestine Will Prevail by Asim al-Nabih, writing from Gaza. He writes, quote, "In the brutal arena of history, Palestine has never been a heavy hitter. Israel possesses the warplanes, the tanks, the surveillance networks, and the unwavering backing of global superpowers. The battlefield is tilted, the referee biased, and yet somehow Palestinians are still here, demanding our rights and calling for our freedom, not because we overpower, but because we endure. For colonized people like us, victory was never going to be a knockout punch. We never dreamed of winning in one decisive blow. The imbalance of power is too immense for such fantasies. But if history teaches anything, it's that those who survive each round, bleeding but upright, sustained by clarity and collective purpose, are often the ones who endure until the final bell. What's happening now is more than political. It's epistemic. It's a war of narratives deciding who gets to define reality, whose suffering counts, whose voices are amplified. For decades, Israel dominated the narrative. It set the parameters of discussion and held influence over much of the global media coverage. While that still holds true with the mainstream corporate media in the West today, young Gazans with no electricity and shattered phones are speaking truths that millions are now hearing. Our narrative is breaking through, unfiltered, raw, undeniable. And that is one of the most decisive shifts of all. In the long game of history, narrative matters. Israel is rapidly losing the struggle for moral and political legitimacy. As global perceptions shift and sympathy grows for the Palestinian liberation struggle, the role of memory becomes even more vital. Children raised on truth and dignity do not forget. They carry stories like weapons, like seeds. And when the time comes, they use them to rebuild, to teach, to hold the world accountable. Gaza has long been a synonym for suffering, besieged, bombed, and starved. We have endured nearly two decades of blockade, multiple military aggressions, and for the past 2 years, a genocidal war, the most devastating in our lifetime. Hundreds of thousands displaced, entire neighborhoods wiped off the map, families incinerated in their sleep. And yet, amid all of this, we continue to live, to resist, to speak, to demand our rights, to insist on our freedom. Ultimately, Israel's aim is to break the will of Palestinians and make us believe that resistance is worse than futile, that history has abandoned us, that the world has turned its back on us for good. That is the true purpose of the siege and the bombs and the orchestrated hunger, not just to kill bodies, but to kill the generational chain of the Palestinian narrative of dispossession, return, and liberation. And yet the truth survives, and with it, so do we. Israel's current leadership speaks of total victory and finishing the job. We don't aspire to the brute power of our occupiers. We aspire to be steadfast, and there is no algorithm, satellite, or bomb that can measure the power of a people who have decided not to die. Our victory will not come because we are stronger, but because we are more rooted, because we love this land more than anything else, because we know the face of this land like we know the faces of our children, because we have accepted the high price of freedom, and we pay it in grief, in bread shared between tents, in lullabies sung in the streets. We are not waiting for a final judgment from the World Court or a decisive vote at the UN. These are milestones, not destinations. What we are waiting for is the day when the injustice ends, criminals are held accountable, and the world finally recognizes the Palestinians' right of return and right to exercise self-determination throughout our historic homeland. We don't just fight to survive. We fight to remember, to rebuild, to belong. And we know that justice, though delayed, will not be denied forever. When will that day come? Maybe sooner than we think. After 2 years of unrelenting bloodshed in Gaza, the only dignified response is respect for our sacrifice rather than any attempt to claim credit for our victory. It must also be responded to with sustained, unwavering pressure on governments to halt the killing. The priority now is to end the slaughter and save Gaza and those who remain. Everything else will follow. Those are excerpts from Underdog Palestine Will Prevail by Asim An-Nabi on electronicintifada.net. Asim is the spokesperson for Gaza Municipality and an engineer and PhD researcher currently based in Gaza City. And now, as we always do, we wanted to highlight people expressing joy, determination, and resilience across Gaza and around the world. Al Jazeera's journalist Noor Abu Rukba filmed herself with a group of kids on October 4th, and she asked why they are happy. "We want an end to the war," they answer. She then asks them where they want to go, and they say they want to go back to their homes and play with their friends.
وأول ما تخلص الحرب شو بدكم تعملوا؟
نلعب مع الصبيان
شو كمان؟
نقعد بدورنا.
طب يلا يعني نحكي يا رب تخلص الحرب.
يا رب
يا رب يا رب تخلص الحرب.
And our contributor Asima Nabi, from whose story I just read an excerpt, posted this photo of a tree in East Gaza City on October 3rd. He says, quote, "This is the Sidra tree. Legend says it's 1,000 years old," Asim writes. "Some believe it's a blessed tree, while others believe it grew over the grave of a saint. Palestinians in Gaza say that people have been unable to uproot it over the past centuries, and that its roots extend dozens of meters underground. This tree sits at the intersection overlooking the Sayyid Hashim Mosque, where the tomb of the Prophet's grandfather, peace and blessings be upon him, is located to the south. If you walk a little east of the tree, you'll reach the Al-Hakimaya neighborhood, where I've lived for half my life. I've never found a neighborhood like it on earth. I passed by the tree today, and memories of a city of roots destroyed by the machine of killing and destruction came flooding back. However, the Gaza tree, impervious to uprooting, spoke volumes that tongues cannot express. This land remains rooted and eternal and will never die." And finally, reporter Saleh Al-Jafarawi captured this clip of the moment he came home and found his cat waiting for him at the door on October 6th. "I missed you," he said to his cat. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.